Hi, good afternoon. I'm delighted to be here to talk to you about our study. Our focus is really much more in the post-operative context, the very challenging things that that opioids do in terms of adverse events and reducing adverse events in the post-operative context for through the lens of living liver donors. So I'll talk to you a little bit about that. I have no conflicts to disclose, and this is a study that was funded by NIDDK, myself and my co-PI, Daniela Ladner, have been doing this study for over 5 years. And we started out with the focus on living donor liver transplantation. It's an ancillary study to a large cohort of 9 centers to really understand the patient safety of living donor transplantation. And living donor liver transplantation has emerged as an important life-saving option for many patients, particularly those with end-stage liver disease. Living donor liver liver transplantation was first tried in 1967, but by 1980 was a standard procedure for end-stage liver disease. However, there were many more potential recipients than there were donors. And so people began exploring this notion of living donors who would donate their liver, and their liver would then regenerate, approximating 100% within 4 to 6 weeks. But the living donor procedures are considerably more complex than deceased donor transplantations. And you have to understand that the context for safety is pretty critical, because this is a person who is a healthy person altruistically undergoing a major procedure with no health benefits for themselves to save someone else's life, right? So donor safety is imperative. However, there were two donor deaths and a few cardiovascular related near miss events. These were investigated extensively, truly, by many people, and they could not find what the problem was. They couldn't figure out, because care looked normal. And as part of this adult-to-adult living donor liver transplantation cohort study to really understand living donor outcomes, they funded us to do a four-center ancillary R01 to study and improve patient safety for this population. We looked at the complications that living donors have. We reviewed 97 medical records of living donors and found a very high rate, 100% had complications associated with opioid use. Very unexpected. 73% had cardiovascular and respiratory events. And in that context, they still were not managing the pain. So this is our pre-findings from those 97 medical chart reviews. We found 76% had hypoxia, less than 95% on room air, bradypnea, which is regular but very slowed breathing. Oh, by the way, I should say hypoxia is where the blood in the arterial veins is reduced such that the tissues do not get sufficient oxygen. So that's what hypoxia is. All of the organ tissues are kind of under oxygenated. Hypotension, you're probably familiar with, and we had the level of systolic blood pressure less than 100, 49%. Hypoxia even less than 90%, 12%, and bradycardia, which is low. Low heart rate. So these are our cardiovascular events. 73% at four centers had these adverse events to the significance that they required transfer to the ICU, intubation, or naloxone. In addition, we found other very concerning adverse events: nausea, constipation, pruritus, urinary retention, vomiting, dizziness, delirium. These are all from one source. So it's a concerning aspect of care. Here we also found adverse events related to the lack of good pain management. Not quite as high as some of the adverse events related to the opioid usage, but still concerning. Tachycardia, tachypnea, and hypertension. All of these findings were confirmed by an independent medical monitor, so that we were sure that the quality of the data that we were producing was accurate. So we found that there's a high complication rate related to opioid use. This was surprising to everyone. No one had really considered this before. And yet, when you think about it, you've just removed half of a liver of this person, and then you're giving them these strong medications. So while it had not been, the dots had not been connected for anybody, it clearly post hoc makes a lot of sense. So we engaged national and international pain experts, anesthesiologists who'd worked on opioid sparing pain protocols. They were leaders in the literature, but also helped us to identify the literature to help us for this procedure in these particular patients to develop an opioid sparing pain protocol. We conducted a breakthrough series learning collaborative, including the four centers with multidisciplinary teams, and developed an opioid sparing postoperative donor pain protocol for LDLT. And we engaged transplant anesthesiologists, transplant surgeons, acute pain experts, and patient safety experts. And I'm here to sort of report on the results for this multimodal opioid sparing pain protocol. The idea is, so we started with preoperative assessment and management. When people think of postoperative pain, they usually think after the surgery. But you can do a lot prior to the surgery and during the surgery that can actually reduce pain post-surgically and also reduce opioid requirements and understand the risks for particular patients. So assessment of patient risk factors for respiratory depression was not routinely done for this population. We made that a part of the protocol and routinely conducted the stop bang for all patients. Bowel preparation for some of those other nausea, vomiting, constipation, ileus kinds of adverse events. And we also provided patient postoperative pain education. We worked again in multidisciplinary teams, anesthesia, surgery, physicians and nurses, and then shared what we developed with patients to get their impression, make refinements, and found that it was well received. During the surgery, during the surgery, there are pharmacological agents that can be applied, local anesthetic, IV ketorolac, and IV steroids within certain parameters and bounds of safety. And then also after surgery, NSAIDs for 72 hours, followed by PO COX-2 inhibitors until discharge. Opioids are available to the patients through PCA and Tylenol as well, but there's less opioid requirement because so much of the pain has been covered. So we didn't find a lot of decrease in the pain itself. We were able to manage to the same level of pain, but we really did affect the opioid requirement to manage it and also the complications. So I'll tell you a little bit more about how we structured things. We had four participating centers: Northwestern, Columbia, Lehigh, Virginia Commonwealth, and we conducted a pre-post analysis where we looked at the records, the 97 from January of 2008 to 2010, and post implementation with the opioid sparing pain protocol, March 2013 to May 2015, and we just closed enrollment. We reviewed the entire medical record. We had the records copied, de-identified, and then fully reviewed by a trained nurse. All complications were reviewed by an MD. And we had the validation through a medical monitor. Again, trying to be very clear about the quality of the data. The study was approved by the Northwestern IRB and the IRBs of each of the setting, other participating centers. So our results, 97 for the pre and 77 for the post. This is the donor characteristics for the pre and the post, and we found that there were no significant differences in the pre-post populations for age, gender, race, language, liver lobe, or BMI greater than 30, things that we thought would could potentially affect the results. This is slightly complicated. On the left here are the complications that we had found in the initial study, listed in order of the percent change. In the second column, second to left column, we identify what the issue is, whether it's because of the opioids themselves or the pain, and then we report the pre and the post, pre and post results. We had three significant reductions for dyspnea, reduction of 43%. I'm having a hard time with this little animation, sorry. We had significantly reduced by 20% hypoxia and by 27% tachypnea. So if you look here, you'll see that the change of the trends are generally in the right direction. However, hyperglycemia, which is also in the right direction, was not changed. So we added steroids. There was a potential risk of hyperglycemia as an additional adverse event that hadn't been shown before to be very high. And so we were happy to see that that did not increase. So you'll see there's a pretty strong trend, up 48 to 20% change reduction from this opioid sparing pain protocol. Here again, as I said, the pain scores showed largely a non-significant trend towards reduced post-operative pain pre and post. We did see a change in the post-op day zero, which is the day of the surgery. What we're reporting here is percent pain of 8 or above, and 30% to 13% in that first day of the surgery. Having a hard time knowing which way to go. So anyway, in concluding, opioid-related complications are far more frequent than previously reported in living donors. This is particularly concerning in view of past donor deaths. The multimodal opioid-sparing pain protocol approach to donor pain management can reduce complications related to opioids. This approach did not lead to higher perception of pain in living donors, and no complications associated with the new protocol were identified. The other thing to mention is I've been now trying to begin to spread this to other surgeries. So you have the particular risks related to the liver transplantation, the liver resection, but there is now a fair bit of evidence developing that this is these opioid-sparing pain protocols do actually reduce complications, they do reduce opioid requirement, and actually could have an influence for the opioids that now are ending up in the community, because there, a lot of them, a majority actually are coming from these post-operative contexts and cancer. This is our team. I mentioned my co-PI, Daniela Ladner, our co-investigators at each of the sites, Elizabeth Pomfret, James Guerrera, Robert Fisher, Marianne Simpson, Anton Scaro. Our team, Amna Dowd is in the audience, Ella Reyes, Tim Curtis, who is our nurse reviewer, Rebecca Corzad, who's our engineer, Ellen, Erin Wymore, coordinator, and Blake Platt, who is a medical student working with us. Mike Abacasis runs the Transplant Center, and Jane Hall runs the Center for Healthcare Studies. Still going the wrong way. Anyway, so thank you very much, and here's my email address if you have any questions after today.
Well, we are learning a lot of clinical medicine today, and so I'm hoping that you can help clarify, is your work in this opioid protocol likely to be generalized around the country? How common is this liver transplant problem?
It's a huge growing area. So the next place where this has been applied has been in orthopedics, knee surgery, and hip surgery. Again, a lot of people take a lot of medications home, but with these opioid-sparing pain protocols, there can be relatively little pain at all and very little opioid requirement, so the people are going home without a lot of opioids, which is another public health advantage. So the patient who's having the surgery has less complications and recovers more quickly, and there's less of this community risk.
So I'm thinking about the social context in which this situation arises, and I'm wondering, is it possible that it's prior opioid experience in the donor as well, or it's essentially treatment emergent?
Treatment emergent, because donors, remember, are very healthy, often young. You have to be extremely healthy to go through one of these procedures. It's not the recipient who may have had some drug or alcohol exposure, Pepsi exposure, excess Tylenol.
Okay, audience, another question? Yes. Could you shout out your question?
Actually, that's still, we haven't done that analysis yet. So I would guess so, but I can't tell you for sure.
Could you clarify the question and the answer?
The question was, I mentioned that the 73% of the cardiovascular complications led to ICU admission, naloxone, intubation. And so we are right now, we just ended enrollment and we're finishing up our analysis. We got the complications, but we haven't gone the next step.
Can I?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to make a comment also. So a year ago, I was actually supposed to be at a meeting in New Orleans, and my dad had a colon infection, and he had procedure. So they did the planar anesthesia prior to surgery, and then Tylenol round the clock afterwards. And his recovery was incredible.
Yeah, it's really kind of an unknown thing that we've been doing to our patients.
Yeah, right.
And
So taking the opioids out really is magic.
Right.